Hey, Adam.
Yes, Mike.
You ever get frustrated that you can't watch certain live sports events because they aren't televised or available in your country, like this country, the United States?
Absolutely. I think we've even talked about that a few times on the air before. Luckily, with our friends at NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a country that is showing the sporting event you want to watch so you don't miss out and you can catch all the action live.
Now, you know I've had a lot of problems with my internet providers over the years doing this show. That's why it's called the Big Audio Nightmare. So I've heard that VPNs are like great for online protection, but, you know, I'm already having trouble with my internet speed.
Yeah, good news here, though. NordVPN is the fastest VPN in the world. I don't even notice it running, so I can stream in game online with no buffering or lagging. Even more than that, NordVPN prevents my internet service provider from throttling my bandwidth, like it sounds like they were doing to you, Mike. So I have a consistently reliable internet connection, and I think they'll do the same for everyone listening.
You know, I heard it's the price of a cup of coffee every month, and you know how much I love my coffee, so that's a small price to pay for premium cybersecurity and access to a vast amount of entertaining content from all over the world.
Absolutely. I think what people can do right now, they can grab their exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/f4w to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan and 4 months for free.
No better price than that. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee.
Again, that's nordvpn.com/f4w to get your discount and 4 months for free.
Hey, Adam.
Yes, Mike.
I went to a WCW Nitro at the MCI Center in Washington, D.C., now known as, I believe, it's not even the Verizon Center anymore. Can't even remember what it's called.
Isn't it like the Capital One Arena, which has
Capital
got some
One
nice,
Arena. That's right, yeah.
Some, but nice tie-in with the Capital One credit card service, which is not our second advertiser on this show, shockingly.
No, and don't talk about them because I owe them money.
Oof, okay. All right, let's talk about Chase.
That's it. But I went to a Nitro there, and there was a point in the show where, like, they all this scrambling is taking place on the right by the ring, and it's like, what is going on here? And out walk Rena Mero and Mark Mero, and they sat down in the front row, and they were still under contract, as we would find out later, to WWF at the time. But Eric wanted to do something. He had to do something with him. So he sat them down, and there they were in the front row at a WCW show. And nothing else ever came from that. Just absolutely nothing at all. And I'm not going to say that that went through my head when New Japan announced that Sasha Banks would be in the front row. Mercedes Moné, I guess it would be, coming up here at the Dome. But what do you think about this here for Miss Sasha Banks, who is still under contract, but has obviously made very public overtures towards stardom in New Japan?
Well, did New Japan officially announce that?
Well, I guess they didn't, did they? I guess it was really more PW Insider and all that.
Yeah, there's the
reports.
The reports coming from PW Insider, which, no, those were not sourced from them listening to this podcast a month or two ago when I basically we speculated on it. And I said, hey, don't be surprised if that happens. But, yeah, it's a weird report in that we still don't know what her contractual status is. I mean, there's a lot of tea leaves that seem to say that she may be free of her WWE contractual responsibilities after January 1st. I believe Sean Ross Sapp at Fightful noted that WrestleCade tried to book her and was told, you know, eventually was told that it, you know, she wouldn't be available till after January 1st. When you take the report today about her being at Wrestle Kingdom and meaning at the Tokyo Dome, physically there, like you said, that doesn't mean that she's going to be coming out and challenging the winner of Kairi and Tam Nakano. That doesn't mean she's going to be seen at all, but she has been invited there, apparently, by New Japan. You look at that, and then you look at the rather odd announcement last night, the segment on AEW Dynamite, where they made a tag team match in the women's division more than a month out, which I don't think the women's division has ever had that long term of booking, with Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter against who is it against? I'm drawing a blank here. It's a mystery partner in someone.
Tony
so I guess
Storm?
Is it Tony Storm? So it's a mystery to me, and it's a mystery to me. No, it's Saraya. It's Saraya.
Saraya,
Saraya and a mystery partner. That's January 11th. So if you are the artist formerly known as Sasha Banks and you are free, what bigger way to make a splash than showing up at Wrestle Kingdom on January 4th and then showing up as a mystery partner at AEW Dynamite in the Forum in Los Angeles, California? Not saying either of those things are necessarily 100% going to happen, but it sure seems like there's a path to that.
And it's a reminder that this pandemic, at least while it is not over as far as people getting sick, the travel restrictions are coming down. And not only is Sasha Banks going to be there, reportedly, allegedly in attendance, but plenty of other foreigners as well who are making their first travel over to Japan for the Tokyo Dome and New Year's Dash and everything else that goes on in wrestling during that week while you're over there. But what this also means is we're probably going to have a load of names that actually are going to be coming in and working. You know, we've seen, you know, people, you know, here and there, but obviously with Stardom and New Japan working together and with Strong looking like it's going to be a good home for women's wrestling in the United States, when it comes to New Japan and it comes to Stardom, you know, who knows how many names. I mean, I look at Jamie Hayter and I think I want to see her back in Stardom. I see a lot of people that I can see going back and forth and actually being, you know, again, coming and going. Obviously, probably the most impactful, mostly be the foreigners going over to there, because I don't think we're going to be getting, you know, Julia and Utami and all of these people on a regular basis here in the States. But, you know, I think going the other direction, the beginning of the year ought to be really something else.
I think it definitely should be. And the other thing that sort of is hanging out there right now, which we still don't know the details of what this show is going to look like, but don't forget, while there's not two nights in a row of Wrestle Kingdom at the Tokyo Dome, there is a second night of Wrestle Kingdom in Yokohama Arena on January 21st. And you would imagine, it's a big arena. What, it holds like 16,000 people. You would imagine whatever this show is going to be, is it going to be another New Japan versus Noah show? Is it going to be New Japan with heavy AEW involvement? That certainly seems to make sense, considering that it's on a Saturday and you're going to have a few AEW wrestlers like Kenny Omega, like FTR at Wrestle Kingdom, but you're not going to have a ton of them because it's on a Wednesday. Maybe not only do you have that, maybe there is an addition on that show. It wouldn't be a stretch to imagine there'd be Stardom participation. And maybe the former Sasha Banks is going to be at Wrestle Kingdom in Tokyo Dome to challenge the winner of Kairi and Tam Nakano to a match for the IWGP Women's Championship as one of the main events of the Wrestle Kingdom show in Yokohama on the 21st.
I love the idea of New Japan basically running a New Japan produce show. That's what I want that show to be. I want to see as many foreigners and outside of New Japan talent on it, strong hearts, bring, yeah, I mean, that sort of thing. That's what I would love for that show to be. Unless you have a hard and fast theme for it, that to me is perfect. You can showcase Stardom, you can showcase AEW, or obviously you probably won't be showcasing too much off CMLL because you got Fantastica Mania coming up, but you know, anybody that you work with, and you know, this is the perfect time to do it. And I do like the concept. I'm not sure about using the Wrestle Kingdom name, but I get it. You know, it's branding and everything, and that's fine. And when you have the ability to do it, you can just move this show back and make it the 4th and the 5th again, if you so chose, and make New Year's Dash the 6th, or 3rd, 4th, and 5th, however you want to do it, if that's what you decide to do later. But again, the concept of these shows, I love.
Yeah, I mean, we've had years, you know, years of the pandemic where they could not capitalize on the relationships they had in terms of actually being able to bring in wrestlers from the outside, from affiliated promotions to Japan. Now they can, and we're seeing on a smaller scale the dividends of that in the tag league right now, which both tag leagues, Super Junior Tag League and World Tag League on the heavyweight side, neither are blow away to the level of a G1 or, you know, a 5-star Grand Prix or even the Stardom Goddesses Tag League, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But there's been some really good stuff in each tournament, and the majority of the interesting things that have happened have involved guys that are, if not from the outside, they're guys from affiliated promotions, whether it be Chris Bay and Ace Austin from Impact, or seeing Aussie Open come in from being, you know, mostly just on Strong, and then, you know, having a major effect and playing a major role in that tournament, or, you know, seeing Gabriel Kidd and Alex Coghlan on a nightly basis in New Japan proper, even, you know, if their win-loss record in the tournament hasn't been, you know, if you're an LA Dojo fan, what you'd hope for. Those are the type of things that make New Japan interesting right now. We haven't had a lot of that. And the more that they can capitalize that, not only in sort of a tour way like we're seeing now, but to your point, on a major show that really is sort of a New Japan wrestling festival type of environment, I really hope that's what we get coming up on the 21st. And you would think, with the idea that Sting and Darby Allin are already going to be not only in the country, but in town for a show the next night in the same arena for Pro Wrestling Noah with the great Muta final goodbye, that might be a hint as to, you know, what promotion they're going to be working with heavily on the 21st.
Maybe Shinsuke Nakamura just stays over there and he shows up too.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many crazy theories and so much speculation going on about what might happen from, you know, January 1st with Pro Wrestling Noah's show at Budokan, through Wrestle Kingdom, through New Year Dash, all the way into that weekend on the 21st and 22nd where New Japan and Noah have huge shows at Yokohama Arena. It is going to be, on so many levels, a fascinating start of the year in Japan. And we kind of got a jump start on that already with the announcement coming just yesterday that Jake Lee, I would say arguably the second biggest star in All Japan Pro Wrestling behind Kento Miyahara. I mean, you could say Yuma Aoyagi, but I think it's a star. Jake Lee would be the number two there. Jake Lee is leaving All Japan Pro Wrestling at the end of the year. No definitive answers as to what his destination is. But, man, when you go back to Tanahashi appealing for Jake Lee to be in the G1 after their interaction at that Cork and Hall anniversary show earlier this year, or just last week when Jake Lee was teaming with Zack Sabre Jr., along with Masakatsu Funaki, against a team that was two-thirds LIJ, and we saw the Jake Lee, Tetsuya Naito interaction in that match. We saw Zack Sabre Jr. post-match openly calling for Jake Lee to join him in New Japan. It certainly feels like, if not immediately on January 1st, it feels like sooner than later, Jake Lee is at least going to be an affiliated freelancer in New Japan, if not full-time.
Does he need to change his character, or is the character that he kind of turned into, because I know, here it goes, it does kind of fit if you want to bring him into House of Torture, or if you want to bring him into Bullet Club, you know, it could be a fit. I don't want to necessarily, look, I'm not calling for that. I don't want to see it. But with his current character, I mean, is that something that you could see? Or would you like to see him shake that off and just, and again, maybe come back in as a baby face? I mean, we had that with Shingo And we've had guys come in. We had Kenta come in as a bad guy. I mean, there's different ways that you could take this with him coming in here. What would you like to see him do?
Yeah, I mean, that's my fear. The number one fear is House of Torture, because we've seen wrestlers like Evil and Sho, who are entertaining, end up in the House of Torture, and we know what that is. And, you know, I don't – like, Yujiro, it's fine. He's there. Who could possibly care? You're not ruining anything by having Yujiro in House of Torture. He's not going to be any better than he already is. But, yeah, I'm not dying to see Jake Lee there. I think that would be horrible. I feel like Jake Lee and Bullet Club, it would just – to me, it would feel like kind of lazy booking. To me, the number one place I'd like to see him in is Suzuki-gun, particularly as that, you know, as time goes on, veers more away from being Minoru Suzuki's group to being, you know, Zack Sabre Jr., Taichi, and El Desperado's group. I just feel like having Jake Lee, a big singles heavyweight threat who stylistically fits in with what they do, that would be my first choice. I also wouldn't fall over shocked if he ends up being a part of the United Empire, even though they're, you know, they're already a huge group right now in terms of numbers compared to where they were just a few months ago. I think there would be a fit there. And I don't know that he'd necessarily be a bad fit in Chaos either, you know, kind of taking that that 1A lieutenant role to Okada, which really nobody in the group has right now, with Goto and Yoshihashi being, you know, just such a tag team rather than really being singles wrestlers. You got Yano, you got a bunch of other people, but he would have a fit there. I mean, I think the character that he has, particularly after they got away from the heavy handedness of it, you know, with when he started the Total Eclipse group, I think it would work in New Japan. I think it's just a matter of where he settles out. And like you said, hopefully not House of Torture.
Well, as you mentioned, Total Eclipse, two other names that have been attached to leaving, and there are, I guess, plenty, but, you know, Izanagi we won't worry about. But Tajiri still has a name, still has a bottom line. Can you see Tajiri coming into New Japan for any, you know, point, or could you see them coming in together, joining up with a unit?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, Tajiri leaving All Japan, to me, is arguably more surprising than Jake Lee. I think if you kind of, we even talked about it, like all the things that I mentioned a few minutes ago, we talked about those things as they happen in real time, and you got the sense that maybe he was starting to wonder what else was out there. Doing the shows you mentioned, doing a great show, you know, you wonder, you know, was he looking for something else? But Tajiri has been pretty firmly entrenched in All Japan, not only in the ring, somewhat the front office, one of the main trainers there, which is, you know, maybe his best strength right now, as someone in terms of anything in ring. I'm not going to rule it out, particularly after they brought in Dick Togo, and we've seen everything that's happened with Dick Togo. I mean, to me, he'll either end up in New Japan or he's going to end up, you know, in Pro Wrestling Noah with sort of everybody of that age. But I'd be surprised if he doesn't surface somewhere. And the other thing, since you just mentioned, we've been talking about Jake Lee, and I just mentioned Noah, and you talked about where a guy's going to go. If Jake Lee isn't going to immediately sign somewhere, like day one, sign with New Japan and debut as a full-fledged member of the roster on January 4th, I could see a scenario where Jake Lee is the ex, the mystery guy for for Sugiura-gun,
yeah,
at the Budokan show on January 1st. I wouldn't fall over shocked there either.
It is probably the most we've talked about All Japan, at least the start of show, in quite some time. It's interesting, you know, and it's, you know, the funny part is, it's like of all the people that I'd like to see leave All Japan, you know, those three, I mean, look, Tajiri and Izanagi are what they are, but, like, you know, I don't know if there's any, are there people that are happy that Jake Lee's out of there?
I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, if they are happy internally, I'm not sure what they're thinking, because at this point, the only guy that moves the needle in the company is Miyahara, and the only other guy that would come close to moving the needle at all in the company is Jake Lee, and they're certainly not stronger without him. But this is, I mean, it's what we've seen in All Japan over the past several years, whether it was Yusuke Okada leaving, Naoya Nomura, leaving. It's just a few examples. You get around December, January, and you're just wondering, you know, who's going to be leaving next? How many times have we talked about, like, Miyahara's going great, or Nomura's on the come up, or, oh, Jake Lee looks like he's finally breaking through. Yume Aoyagi, he maybe could be Triple Crown champion. And it feels like they get a little bit of momentum, and then they shoot themselves in their own 2 feet. And it kind of feels like that's what's going on here. I wouldn't be overly surprised if this is more of the beginning of the story than the end of the story. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a pretty tumultuous first quarter in All Japan. And I mean, talk about Miyahara, I think you would agree that he's the ultimate shoe to drop. To the point where if he ever leaves, I would give All Japan, if they're still an independent company in the sense that they're not tied in with a Bushiroad or a cyber agent or anything like that, I would give All Japan 6 months tops. Yeah. Before, at best, they ended up being on the level of like a 0-1 company. He is All Japan right now.
Yeah, that's scary to think about. And it's, you know, and there seems to be a lot of chess pieces that are trying to move around. You know, Dave Meltzer mentioned it on Wrestling Observer Radio. Brandon Thurston talked about it on WrestleNomics. There was a conference or something that was held where Stephanie McMahon and Nick Khan talked about branching out into other things. And with Triple H being back and Vince being out of the mix now, remember, he wanted satellites. He wanted NXT.
I remember
Japan.
The map.
Yeah, exactly.
The map. It looked like they were lobbing big NXT missiles across the globe.
Yeah. And you know, who knows? You're going to see Uncle Paul give a hug to somebody over in Japan, but look, they've had these interests. And which is the promotion that is most, again, most, what's the easiest promotion to swoop in to take? It's All Japan, because they're the one unaffiliated with really anybody.
Or Big Japan, they can always go that route again. That always cracked me up, the idea of Big Japan, which is short, beefy dudes like Daisuke Sakamoto killing each other, or death matches. That was going to be the in for WWE. I mean, even though they did try it, I mean, when they couldn't get Noah, they couldn't get Stardom. They were looking for any foot in the door. I mean, that's where they were looking. But yeah, it's going to have to be somebody on the level of that. And then you wonder, going back to what happened with Noah, where that seemed like a possibility, at least to some level, and then Cyber Agent swoops in and buys them. You look at, you know, the discussions that did happen between Stardom and WWE, by all reports, you know, that then Bushiroad swooped in and bought Stardom and saved us from that. You know, will someone else or one of those promotions swoop in and, you know, absorb one or more of these, you know, somewhat bigger independent promotions that are still left in Japan to try to keep them out of the hands of WWE? It's a wild time.
And All Japan was actually wrestling too. 46th annual, I believe it was, Real World Tag League, because it is Tag League season, and, well, they were the original Tag League. And Shuji Ishikawa and Cyrus the Destroyer. Cyrus the Destroyer and Shuji Ishikawa actually won the block, basically, when it got right down to it, the final block standings, but the final, they ended up losing to Kento Miyahara, who wins this thing for the third time in a row because you don't have anybody else. So Miyahara's got to be a part of everything. He gets a piece of everything.
Yes.
And he and Takuya Nomura, this is the first year they've teamed together to win it. And I think it was Aoyagi the other years with Miyahara. But
yes.
Shuji Ishikawa and Cyrus burning through. And I know Scenic City, maybe. Against PCO. I know I've seen Cyrus the Destroyer before, but I'll be damned if he didn't get the pass all the way through. And obviously teaming with Ishikawa helped, but how much of this tournament did you see any of it really besides the last night? Because I really didn't. So to you know, other than some highlights. So to see Cyrus in action there in the main event going against Miyahara and chopping away at Miyahara and Nomura, it was something else. And I'm not trying to, like, throw any shade on this guy either or anything like that. I mean,
he's not bad.
No.
And as far as, like indie knockoffs of Vader that make their way to Japan, I've seen far, far worse. I think you get the guy some better gear, and he, you know, he could be something in All Japan. I don't mind him.
Well, that's the thing, is he doesn't emote a whole lot. And no. I don't know if part of that was just, you know, you don't want to screw up or anything, or just, hey, you just do this and go back out again. But he was a very direct line, do some damage, turn, like, literally turn around, walk right back, you know, right, you know, stare at the corner, tag out. So there obviously is some, you know, some color that you're going to need to add to him. But it was like, look at this big old country boy out there, but he is so much bigger than everybody else that because it's only him over there, and then you look at the rest of the roster, it's like, because there's only one of him, he stands out. So I do have to say, kudos to Cyrus. It was really surprising as kind of going through day by day as the results came out, and it's just like, Cyrus? Like, Shuji Ishikawa and Cyrus? I mean, you got the Saitos, you got, you know, obviously Nagata and Anzai. You know, that was going to be a lot of L's for Anzai as he starts to come along, but it was just like, I'll be damned. I don't know if I thought it was going to be Jake Lee and Aoyagi against Miyahara and Nomura or what, but I didn't expect Cyrus.
Yeah, I don't think a whole lot of people had Ishikawa and Cyrus in their fantasy real-world tag league bracket, but they did go through. I love Miyahara and Nomura as a team. It's sort of that ultimate odd couple, or Miyahara just being the most extra wrestler who's ever lived.
He really
is. And Nomura being such like a kind of a wink and a nod, dorky, nerdy shooter guy who's just an absolute badass. Still, they're a great team. Again, it's Miyahara going through. It's not shocking. So they'll get it'll be Miyahara and Nomura taking on Suwama and Kono for the tag titles at the traditional beginning of year shows for All Japan at Korakuen Hall. Atsuki Aoyagi defeated Dan Tamura to win the Junior Battle of Glory tournament, which took place concurrently with this. This was very good. They also had a very good match a couple days earlier in the tournament before this being the final. This did not get to the level of really any of the recent Atsuki Aoyagi Rising Hayato matches. They had a match in the tournament that was very good. They had that match that headlined All Japan's, I think, most recent Korakuen show prior to this, which we talked about a little bit on this podcast. Just a fantastic match that I thought really is going to cement Atsuki Aoyagi, you know, as a junior heavyweight who could actually main event All Japan shows, but that hasn't happened as of yet. So that's very much worth watching.
And they did try to give him a little bit extra there too, with the fact that he actually had to beat Tamura on the fourth to actually even tie him and then go on and beat him again. So, you know, it was a double stamp, at least, that they tried there.
Yeah, no, and that's a good point, because a lot of times you see in tournaments where, you know, if it's a tournament where it's one block, everybody wrestles everybody, the guys that wrestle in the final will have wrestled earlier in the block, and it's usually always the opposite result in each match. Whereas here, that wasn't the case. Maybe the most noteworthy thing on this show, though, more so than either of these tournament finals, was the result. With Yuji Nagata and Yuma Anzai, who we've talked about in previous weeks, Anzai is clearly being groomed as the next ace of All Japan Pro Wrestling. They talk about him, and they talk about Jumbo Tsuruta in the same breath on commentary all the time. It's very similar to how they talked about Suwama when he first came into All Japan.
That's exactly how they brought him into, for people who don't remember. I mean, it was Suwama that was like in every Photoshop Jumbo with him. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And that's what they've done with Anzai here, whether it be some of the moves, just how they've talked about him, where he's been positioned as a young wrestler, wrestling against a lot of top guys. Here, Yuma Anzai gets the shock pin, the German suplex hold pins Suwama, which to me, there's just even more symmetry with Suwama and Anzai here, in that Suwama was brought in and then got pushed really hard, really early, arguably before he was ready, just because outside of, you know, Kojima and you know, Kawada was still a top guy at that point, but they just didn't have much of anything else in All Japan. And so they went hard with Suwama and then did the turn, had him join Voodoo Murders. And he's had a great career. I still wonder if he had had a couple more years to develop before he got pushed into the main event scene, if he would have been even better long term. But here you see almost the same thing. The very day that it's announced that Jake Lee is gone, who knows who else is going to be gone? What is All Japan going to do? They go from Yuma Anzai not beating anybody to him beating Suwama, which, like, I'm always talking about, I want, you know, a supernova, a shock win, so I can't complain about it. And I like Anzai. I think he is the real deal. Great, legit background, big guy, great look. For his experience, which is very minimal, he's good. But man, if this is leading to him getting a big push, I don't know if he's ready for that, and this could backfire.
You know, yeah. Well, you're right. Although at least big fish, small pond, or at least even if it's medium-sized fish, it's still a small pond, so he's going to be able to make some mistakes. And yeah, All Japan fans will kind of bomb him for it, but by the time a lot of other people, the way things are going, see him, maybe he'll be a little bit more refined by that point. But it Yuji Nagata, I'm sure, does not want to give up full affiliation with New Japan. He still wants to have a foot in the door there. But could you see a scenario where it is offered to Yuji Nagata to be the foreman or to make his home there full time?
I could. I mean, it all is going to come down to, you know, like, can he make a living there comparable to the living he makes in New Japan? And do you make that jump and then All Japan goes under? And then, you know, are you welcomed back the same way you would be if you had been in New Japan the whole time? But I mean, honestly, for the last, whatever it's been, 4, 5, 6 months, functionally, that's what it's been. He's been on not only All Japan big shows, but he's been on a lot of their smaller shows. He obviously was teaming here with Anzai on every tag league show. You know, it's up to this point, it feels somewhat similar, actually very similar, to Satoshi Kojima in Pro Wrestling Noah. However, to me, like, I'm almost, and maybe it'll be proven wrong, I'm almost convinced that at some point relatively soon, it will be announced that Kojima is no longer contracted in New Japan and is full-time Noah. I mean, that basically seems like the situation already, but it isn't official. Whereas I feel like with Nagata, it might be a little bit more in the middle. But for any of these guys, you know, whether it be, you know, we saw Tiger Mask get a little bit of run at All Japan, Nagata, Kojima, none of those guys are going to factor into any sort of significant plans in New Japan going forward. I mean, I think the last 5 or 6 years for those guys has borne that out to a great degree. And now that, you know, borders, as you said, are opening up, guys are coming in, there's more and more partnerships, there isn't, and there's not going to be room for Yuji Nagata and Satoshi Kojima and guys like that on these shows, for better or worse. And so they're going to have a decision to make. Do they stick around, wrestle a handful of times a year, get paid by New Japan, and continue that affiliation, you know, for the rest of their lives, if that's kind of the implied deal? Or do they feel like they have a lot more left to give, like Kojima clearly feels that he does? And do they, you know, do they go full time somewhere else? It's hard to tell.
Kojima, I'm surprised he's actually even still officially there. You know what I mean? Like, him appearing with New Japan or something, or just popping up like a Muppet. Like, I could see that, but I'm still surprised that he, like, again, unless the contract is up in January or February this year, and
that would be
it,
my,
like,
guess.
He always likes to travel. He likes to get around. He likes to do what he likes to do, because, like, he's going to wrestle till he's dead. You know, as long as he can go in there and get a reaction, I mean, when it's
as long as his knees hold out.
Exactly. I mean, as long as he's upright, you know, there's always a place he's going to be able to go. So I'm almost surprised that he's even still there. When Nagata, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. Again, one of the things too with New Japan is like to be able to have veterans like this and to be able to have a. Because you have Nakanishi, you have so many guys that can actually do training or can be, you know, useful into the growth and development of your younger wrestlers. To be able to have Nagata out there, because let's say All Japan does bite it or something, like you have Anzai, like he's the guy who's getting the phone numbers, you know, he's the guy who's getting the cards. So
he's Jushin Liger at the J Cup.
Bingo. And it's still, you know, there was no better era. Now I want to say there was no better era, but one of the most fun eras was when Liger would go out there and you would slowly get guys who would come in and, you know, we would give people shots. And I always loved that.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think it's more likely that that will be Nagata's role going forward. Like I still pretty much expect Nagata in New Japan to be status quo, where he still is under contract in New Japan. We see him on New Japan shows, but we probably see him a lot on All Japan, like we've seen, where I think there's a very strong possibility that we see Kojima kind of formalize what we've already seen, which is him being full-time Noah, wearing Noah t-shirts, the whole deal. And understandably so, because unlike, like, Nagata is still very good, but Nagata has definitely lost his fastball, but he can still be entertaining. Kojima is very, very, very close to what he was 10 years ago. Like, he has not dropped off that much at all. And so I totally can see a guy like that feeling like, well, the last 4 or 5 years of his career, he's been lower and less factored in than he should be given his ability and given his connection to the crowd. And so I could see him thinking, like, damn, I need to strike while the iron's hot. And what better place than Pro Wrestling Noah, where – there's a lot of guys my age, and I'm better than all of them, and I'm willing to do business more than all of them. So there's really a place here for me. So yeah, I think that probably is the right call for Kojima to go full-time Noah if it gets to that point.
Speaking of guys from that generation, Jun Akiyama is your new DDT Extreme champion because he beat Joey Janela.
A sentence that we all would have thought would have been possible 3 or 4 years ago when Jun Akiyama was in the same role in All Japan that we're talking about Kojima and Nagata sort of having been stuck in New Japan for the past few years. We all saw this one coming.
He has got an interesting job. I like the job that Jun Akiyama has, you know, and he's out there with Eddie Kingston and now he's out there with Joey Janela. And I'd say I had to send you a text before the show because it kind of hit me that it's like, I've seen in person Janela wrestle Suzuki. I've seen him wrestle Great Sasuke and then sing Bon Jovi songs right afterwards after they pulled Sasuke out of that fucking barrel. And it's like, and then I'm watching Akiyama. And it's like, you know, and the match was what it was. It was exactly what you would want it to be for the 10 minutes that it went on. Within seconds, they're outside on the floor. Within a few more seconds, Akiyama is off the table that Joey put him on and instead is pushing Joey off the top rope through what I swear to God, it looked like some piece of like art, modern art or something from the long shot that they had of this chair pyramid. It wasn't as sexy as it was close. And it surely wasn't sexy for Janela as he went through it with the elbow drop after Akiyama pitched him off the ropes. But I got to be honest, you know, the Kingston match was one thing, but I did really, that for some reason popped me in thinking that, you know, no matter how old you get, you still have a match with Joey Janela in you. I mean, and that's literally the case, too, because Mike Jackson was 975 years old, wrestled Joey Janela.
Yeah, exactly. Akiyama could have 30 more years of matches with Joey Janela at this point.
George South wrestled Joey Janela.
Deathmatch George South, man. That's another one of those, like, you live long enough.
You see it all? Yeah.
You'll see it all. It's one of those reasons to stick it out and stick around. Also on that same show, Yuki Ueno won the DO or D King, whatever, however you want to call it, Grand Prix, defeating Yuki Onaya, who's a guy that really had just been hanging around in DDT for quite a while, stepped up. I remember he had on a small DDT show, I want to say last year, he had a really, really good match with Kazusada Higuchi before kind of disappearing for a while. By far the biggest push of his career. Yuki Ueno gets the win, however, and then that will lead to what, for my money, is the best match that DDT can put on. And I honestly think this is going to have a chance to be a legit match of the year candidate, as it will be Kazusada Higuchi, one of the best wrestlers of 2022, defending the KOD title against Yuki Ueno, who's been one of the best wrestlers of the past couple of years. So that's something to look out for on the DDT front going forward.
I love that. I love that. And just another thing I loved was Dragon Gate. Actually, and they seemed to really get the word out about the fact that that show was free on December 6th. Would have been on Tuesday morning that they ran. And, you know, good. You need to do that more. You need to get the attention out there. I think most of these promotions, even though they may not want to, they need to look at whenever New Japan's algorithms are up, you know, flood with that. And yes. So, you know, Cyber Fight, all that sort of stuff. But so, you know, Dragon Gate had their free show. Caseload did a really good job previewing it on Voices of Wrestling. And that always helps, too, if you got, you know, somebody out there who can actually lend a preview for it as well, too. But I only saw, you know, bumps and clicks for the most part, you know, and I know we're going to talk about the main event, but how much of that show did you get to see? And you already get Dragon Gate as it is, but, you know, have you been able to keep up with it at all here recently?
Yeah, the main event scene in particular, definitely. And the main event was what I've seen from this show so far. Yuki Yoshioka defeating Masaki Mochizuki. Kind of continuing the trend of Yoshioka, challenging as champion, challenging former champions, and beating them, defeats Mochizuki 26-16 with a frog splash. I thought this was awesome. I thought it was awesome mostly because of Mochizuki. I like Yuki Yoshioka. I think he's very good. I think there's still another level to get, and it's sort of on-the-job training as the Open the Dream Gate champion, the top champion of the company, that he's getting against this cavalcade of former champions. But there are some great moments here for Mochizuki, including one where he gets hit with, I believe he got hit with the frog splash the first time. And then as Yoshioka is going for the cover, Mochizuki from the bottom just cold cocks Yoshioka right in the jaw. What a great spot. That was just Mochizuki doing that stuff throughout. It's insane when you think, you know, he's well north of 50 at this point, and he still looks great. He's still a fantastic wrestler, whether it be in Dragon Gate or his many appearances in Pro Wrestling Noah. You know, so that's the big result from the show. But the bigger news from this show is that Shingo Takagi returned to Dragon Gate and will be teaming with his lifelong rival, BB Hulk, to take on Yamato and Madoka Kakuta at Final Gate 2022 in Fukuoka. Did not see that coming.
No. And in fact, I was only going to note on the wrestling news that morning that, hey, you know, there was the title match and this is what happened. No, there was Shingo who came out and awesome. Great. Okay, cool. That, no problem there. I thought that was awesome. I love that. I like when Kenta goes back to Noah. I the fact that they're cool with letting him do that, because again, nothing is missed by letting anybody go do things like this. You know, yes, there's a chance somebody could get hurt. There's a chance you could walk out in the morning and an asteroid could fall on your head too. So, you know,
there's also a really good chance that something cool can happen and people will be excited.
Exactly.
And we've had so little of that, not just during the pandemic, but really the past 5 or 6 years prior to the pandemic with the New Japan wrestlers. That's why it's so exciting to see things like this, or the matchups that we had at the Fujinami show last week, or after you finish your point, I apologize for interrupting. We'll get to talking about the what's coming up, the Taka Taichi Despi show which has some really cool stuff coming up on it. But yeah, we need more of this.
No Despy, by the way. I think it's just Taka Taichi on this show.
Ah, there we go.
I'd say Despy didn't throw in his share of the money to get on there. So,
well, I think it's the because they had their anniversary shows, and now it's like the combined anniversary show of the two men's careers.
Well, let me, because obviously we have always had an issue on this show with staying up with Dragon Gate in a way where we're able to bring it to the table, because you have to give, like anything else, you got to give it time. You got to watch the matches. And unfortunately, we slide behind where guys like Alan Farrell and a lot of other people do a great job covering it. So we kind of take the back seat on this. So I obviously am not going to say that I'm a Dragon Gate expert or anything like that, but it certainly seemed to me from where we were at, you know, because again, when Ben K and, or no, was it Shun? It was Shun. No, it was Ben K and Pac wrestled. Like, that was, to me, as an outsider, that was one of the last high water marks internationally buzz wise for Dragon Gate. I know there's been some things since then, but it does seem like Shun and Ben K and just kind of, things only got to a certain point, and here's where they're at. So it seems like, you know, Shingo going in there, I don't know what the plan is going to be. It not only is fun to see a re-energizing thing from a New Japan guy going in, but would I be wrong or completely head up at my ass to say that Dragon Gate could certainly use this right now too?
I don't think it can hurt. I mean, I kind of think where they're at is, you talked to all the guys, you know, the Ben Kays and the Shun Skywalkers really breaking through. And then to me, it's that next wave. Obviously, Yuki Oshioka with the title, Koto Minora. And then the guy that I still think, just to keep watching out for, is Takumi Fujiwara, who is just insanely good for as few matches as he's had in his career. And that's the thing that Dragon Gate always has, that is, you know, maybe more so than any other company in the world. With the caveat that maybe you can make the argument that so many of, you know, it's a very similar style that most guys that come through the system have, but their ability to churn young wrestlers out who are great at debut and then just get better and within a year or two are main eventers, you don't see like that, anything like that, I should say, anywhere else in the world.
No.
So it feels to me like we're kind of at another one of those junction points where you've got two, three, maybe four generations of top Dragon Gate guys kind of all meeting. When, you know, either on the young guys' end, they're reaching their potential. On the older guys' end, they're still at or near at the top of their game. So, yeah, I mean, I think from an in-ring standpoint, it's very, very high. And I think it's just going to be, you know, what is it that can bring – not that there is no buzz, because there is certainly more buzz about Dragon Gate than there is about All Japan, for example.
Yes.
But it's not necessarily at the level of, you know, the sort of the stuff you were talking about a few years ago, you know, when Pac was there, when Ricochet was there, that sort of deal. It can't hurt having Shingo, but I don't think it's a situation where it's like, they're in dire straits and they got to bring him in to pump up the house. I mean, had 1,200 fans here at Corican Hall, which we haven't seen too many promotions break the 1,000 barrier, much less the 1,200 barrier in the last couple of years there.
Yeah, and it's just, believe me, I'm not, you know, trying to bury the business or anything like that, but, you know, it's like kind of like the timeline test, because, you know, we did Yoshioka and Ben K and Skywalker and Minoru and talking about those guys, and it's like they are so good. And you mentioned something about, because, and I'll circle this back to Mochizuki just for a second and the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame, because I would tend to doubt the next time we do a show, by the time we do a show, the awards are going to be out that Shima's in or that Shingo is in. But I'll say this. You can make a case for Mochizuki anyway if you wanted to. But if guys like Shima and Shingo get in, it is going to make you really start to look then at also everybody else that was there during that time, because that run of Dragon Gate that produced Shingo kind of, I don't want to say in the middle of it, because it really had just kind of kicked off. I mean, it wasn't that all that far away removed from Toriumon. You know, it was its own thing. And then obviously Shingo got launched, but I mean, it was still a very, very young company. But it's like with Mochizuki, it's like, geez, you know, especially if those guys get in, there's even more of a reason that why you would, you know, you start looking at some of these other guys who had a long, long history there, and you start to really start to wonder about that.
Yeah, honestly, to me, when, if and when, what, if Tomohiro Ishii is a Wrestling Observer Hall of Famer, at that point, that opens the door for a lot of other guys. And to me, Mochizuki is maybe the next in line in that same way, where you could, I don't think you could ever necessarily say, well, he's a guy who massively drove business, but the level of wrestling match that he's had over literal decades upon decades upon decades, and the fact that he's still doing it into his 50s, you know, 10 years older maybe than a guy like Ishii at this point. You know, the only thing you could say is, well, he hasn't done it on as large of an international scale as Ishii has, given that most of his most celebrated matches came at the height of New Japan's resurgence. If we're doing a match quality Hall of Fame and a longevity Hall of Fame, Mochizuki would be a guy that's pretty hard to keep out.
Yeah, I'm going to say something that I believe is brave yet controversial.
Uh-oh, there we go. I wish we had a sounder.
Shingo belongs in the Hall of Fame before Tomohiro Ishii. Yes or no? Am I crazy? Because look, I'm not saying that it's facts, but I could tell you, I could argue that one. For importance to the company, am I crazy?
I don't think you're crazy at all. I would say, to me, at best, or at worst, depending on how you want to say it, it's a wash, particularly when you look at the fact that Shingo's done it as a top guy in multiple companies with different styles, whereas Ishii, one, has never been a top guy, even though in New Japan he's been a celebrated, incredible wrestler. And even though Ishii has been wrestling longer, Shingo, I think you can make a strong argument, has been having great matches longer than Ishii. And
some would argue, because of the speed, it's in some ways, I mean, look, again, everybody's got their own thing. One could argue that he worked in some ways a more difficult, so I'm not saying a harder, tougher style. It's all tough.
But not like, tougher, but I would say more demanding.
Yes.
It's a more athletically demanding style that he worked in for a long time. And, you know, he was a, if not the top guy in both of those promotions, obviously in Dragon Gate and in New Japan, regardless of what the circumstances are, he's a guy who held the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship, which has not been the case with Ishii and very, very, very likely will not be the case with Ishii. So to me, particularly given the fact that there is probably, barring some sort of unforeseen injury, there is more time left in the career of Shingo than Ishii. I would say if you wait to induct both wrestlers into the Hall of Fame, like if both of them, if neither of them are eligible until they're retired, I can't see many scenarios where Shingo wouldn't have a stronger argument than Ishii.
The Wrestling Observer Newsletter, WONHOF Tracker on Twitter. They'll get a lot of people's, anybody that posts publicly what their ballot is, they will take that in and kind of compute it together. They do a good job keeping track of all this stuff as it stands right now, and this will surprise no one. And this is obviously, again, this is just, you know, them kind of pulling some things together from the voters that have made their votes known. But Akira Taue and Toshiaki Kawada look like they will be in from Japan, which is a no-brainer selection. But it
going in as a tag team, you're saying?
Going in as a tag team, because there's now a new re-emphasis on tag team. So this is where you'll see Argentina Rocca and Miguel Perez, and you may see some other tag teams actually make it in there. But it does look like Tetsuya Naito and Kota Ibushi are going to be super duper close, and it does not look like anybody is even close to that. In fact, Ishii and Shingo looks like they're real close together as you fall. So they look like they don't have anywhere near enough votes from, you know, this polling here, but it looks like Naito and Kota Ibushi may make it in. And that's really, in some ways with Ibushi, you know, there was nothing that's been done because of unfortunate circumstances that has changed his case at all to make it into the Hall of Fame. But he is, for everybody out there that argued against Kenny Omega being inducted on the Japanese ballot, that did not have a bone to pick with Kenny Omega because they listened to the Cornette show or they just don't like him. The real beef for a lot of people, and Fumi Saito brought this up, I brought this up, I think you brought this up when we talked about it, you know, it's how can you vote for Kenny Omega and not for Kota Ibushi? Because for what Kenny Omega did for New Japan, if you're giving him extra credit points for there, well, you know, Kota Ibushi deserves a hell of a lot more of him for what he was able to do with DDT and what he was able to do, frankly, by extension for Kenny Omega and for some other people as well.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, honestly, if you're asking me, you know, those four guys, Naito, Ishii, Shingo, and Ibushi, I can't tell you that I wouldn't have Ibushi as the fourth in that list as far as who I would put in the Hall of Fame.
That's fair.
I don't think he has a stronger argument than the other three. It just when you look at, I mean, he may have shined brightest, but it may also have been the shortest. I mean, I think Naito is the biggest no-brainer of the four, and I frankly think it's ridiculous that it's even a question when you look at the longevity that he's had in New Japan and how huge of a difference maker he is when it comes to popularity, merch sales. He's clearly been while Okada's been the guy for the last 10 years, while Tanahashi was the guy that got them to the point they're at and continues to, you know, be the unquestioned ace as far as a character. I don't think you could argue that anyone's been more demonstrably popular when it comes to moving tickets and moving merchandise during this historic run that New Japan had been slash has been on, however you want to look at it, than Tetsuya Naito, on top of the fact that dude has a ton of great matches.
Yeah, it's just a ridiculous number of matches. So
a ridiculous number of great matches that I feel like is somehow undersold when compared to his contemporaries in the company or his contemporaries generationally, just because he's such a strong character. I think people forget that he almost never misses in big matches. I can think of that one match, that one Intercontinental title match a few years back with Minoru Suzuki that just didn't work for whatever reason. That's like the only bad Naito big time match I can recall seeing, you know, for over a decade.
Yeah. It's like you can't help it but take him for granted, even while you say, I'm not taking him for granted. It's just like it's because it is, and unfortunately for him, I think it's the shine of Okada and Tanahashi, because they are otherworldly Hall of Famers. Like, they are otherworldly pro wrestlers. And I wouldn't put Naito in that category. But when you, like you mentioned, when you start checking off every single box, including the merchandise and the popularity, you know, amongst fans and the, I mean, it's, to me, again, he also is he's a no brainer. We'll see.
It's not a perfect comparison, but all the things you mentioned, and I find myself thinking about Naito in this way a lot. He's Randy Savage.
That's great, actually. That's a great way to put it, because in a different way, and granted, he was bigger than Savage, but also he, like a peacock, he's bigger than what he is. The persona, everything about Tetsuya Naito is a lot bigger than he is physically.
Yes.
And the whole everything that from and every aspect of his game. So like I told you years ago when, you know, we were talking about Yujiro Naito, you got to bet on Naito.
That would be for long, long, long time listeners. That would be like me coming on and say, you know, I always knew that Shinsuke Nakamura was going to be the most charismatic wrestler in the world.
I had to do that because Cubs fan, they're doing this Alternativa tournament in CMLL, right? And so you got an older guy that teams with an up-and-comer, and they've had these different teams before. And I think it was 2009, whatever it was, Okamura wins the thing with Yujiro, oh, of all people. And when
Okamura,
you...
Jesus. It's really funny that you mentioned that, because we just saw on the most recent edition of Wrestling at Random that just went up last Sunday, it was an episode of CMLL TV from 2005, and Okamura, Hajime Ohara, who now is a member of Kongo in Pro Wrestling Noah, and Gato were a trio.
It's just absolutely ridiculous, because you look at there, it's like Hector Garza and Angel De Plata and Místico and Angel De Oro, and you know, you're looking at all these teams, and there you go. Who was the winner? Yujiro and Okamura. And by the way, folks, Naito and was Okada there too, in and out at that time? That may have been a little bit later. But it's just like, yeah, it just always blew me away. But yeah, so Yujiro, look, he got what he ever wanted, was ever going to win way early in his career, and that's been about it. Actually, he really won getting the girl and the cane and the gimmick and everything, and then that was the high water mark, and we're pretty much done from there.
Yeah, I would say that's a safe bet. Moving on from Yujiro, who thankfully is not in the Taka Taichi orbit. Before we get to the Stardom Tag League, I did just want to briefly mention maybe the show that I'm looking forward to the most of any before the end of calendar year 2022 is the Taka Taichi show coming up on December 19th, I believe, at Yoyogi National Stadium Gymnasium again, which is right now my favorite building in wrestling because it looks cool. It's big enough that it feels big, but it's small enough that you can fill it you know, without having to put on an insane show or just without the pressure of not filling it. And for their big shows, for the most part, crowds can cheer. The Taka Taichi Mania show has Taichi versus Shingo Takagi for the KOPW title. The build for this has been awesome. They've just been beating the hell out of each other on every show for the past month. So there's that. And then, not only is this the show that I'm most looking forward to, this is definitely the match I'm most looking forward to for the rest of the year. It is Suzu Suzuki taking on Tomoka Inaba.
Yes, please.
That is going to be awesome. Suzuki has been tremendous this year. She's always great. We talked about how great she was in the 5-star Grand Prix. And Tomoka Inaba is... Again, use that word. She's awesome. She's only going to get better. And man, just the two of them on this show, like think back to how awesome the atmosphere was for that entire show, for the women's matches on the last Taka Taichi Mania show that was main evented by Desperado against Jun Kasai. Like if the crowd is anything like that, this match in this show is going to be well worth the separate pay-per-view purchase that you have to make to get it on New Japan World on the 19th.
We'll get to it when we talk about the Stardom show, but Inaba is a star to me. The only thing is her height, but other than that, she to me screams star. Now, anything really, this is the only thing I'm going to say. Longtime listeners of this show know that in December, I take a mental break from New Japan, and a lot of people, oh, how can you do that? A lot of you take that same break during Fantastica Mania or other parts of the year. It does happen to all of us. So this has always been the time of the year because of the tag league that I have always pushed it to the side, even though they've added the junior tag league to this. And I think that's still the smartest thing you can do is have these concurrent tag leagues fill up the blocks, fill up the months, that is, leading into the Tokyo Dome. And there's a lot of different things you can do off of those shows. And still, as we've seen with Hikuleo and Carl Anderson, you can still do your singles matches. You can still do other things while this stuff is going on. But the only thing I'm going to say about any of this is I don't know what happens to Leo Rush when he passes the international dateline, but he gets better. And oh. I don't know what it is with him inside New Japan that feels different than him everywhere else, but I like it. And I hope that the team with Yo, again, I don't know what the deal is. And obviously, he's going to want to come back to the States. They need him on strong. He's got a lot of money he can make on the indies, J-Cups and bolas and whatnot. But boy, I hope he doesn't sign on with anybody full time. I would really just like to see him in New Japan as much as humanly possible, because I think his dynamic is needed. Even, and again, that's the amazing part about Lio Rush, with the things he's able to do, the misdirections. When you think you've seen it all in junior heavyweight division, he can still, he still brings something fresh to it too. Every time he's out there, I really like him a lot, and I really, really like this team.
Yeah, they've been tremendous. Lio Rush, 100% agree with everything you said. It just is a fit. You can tell he seems extremely happy in that environment. He's just a shot of adrenaline, a lightning bolt in a junior heavyweight division that absolutely needs it. He's single-handedly revived Yo's career over the past couple of weeks in this tournament. Yo looks like a completely different wrestler teaming with Lio Rush. They just work together. And with Yo, like, there's no shame in being a good tag team wrestler. Sometimes guys just aren't cut out for singles. Stan Lane never needed to be a singles wrestler. No one would ever say he was a good singles wrestler, a great a singles wrestler, or they need to see him in that role. But teaming with Bobby Eaton, he was perfect.
Bobby Eaton.
And that, Bobby Eaton for sure. Bobby Eaton was good enough that he could still be a great singles wrestler too. But yes, there's guys who, I mean, you look at FTR, Cash Wheeler. I don't need to see him as a singles wrestler, but my God, I want to see that guy wrestle as a tag team wrestler for as long as I live. And Yo could be a version of that guy that it'll never click as a single, but with the right partner, you know, show in the past and here with Lio Rush, he's looked great. So yeah, I hope Lio sticks around. I hope we get to see a lot more of him in New Japan. And like we said earlier, that's been the thing that has made this tag league, while it's not, you know, blow your doors off great, it's what's made it entertaining, is Lio Rush and Yo teaming, or seeing Gabriel Kidd get back on the horse and look great in Japan. I don't necessarily think he and Alex Coghlan as a team are long for this world. They keep losing it. And while they haven't outright teased dissension, almost every time they lose, it's some sort of miscommunication between the two that leads to the finish. So you still kind of think one of these guys might, you know, end up turning on the other, and joining a group. I could see Gabriel Kidd still ending up in United Empire. Maybe this is all just headcanon. Maybe I'm just fantasy booking this myself, but that's the feeling I get when I watch it. But yeah, it's stuff like that. Aussie Open looking great. Aussie Open, talk about maybe under the radar, my favorite match on the heavyweight side of the tournament was just a couple days ago on the 3rd. So undercard match in the tournament, only went 11 minutes. But Aussie Open against Gabriel Kidd and Alex Coghlan was great. And just all those sorts of things, seeing those guys instead of just the same 25 people that were on New Japan shows for, you know, a good two and a half years. That's what's making this maybe a little bit more watchable tour than in previous years. That said, I fully expect that Aussie Open is going to win the tournament, particularly after they lost to Naito and Sonata. I think that will end up being the final. I think Aussie Open will get their win back. They will win and they will defeat FTR come Wrestle Kingdom on January 4th.
Yeah, that makes the most sense to me for a variety of reasons, including then Aussie Open can come over and beat FTR on TV here too in a rematch, because I can see that happening.
Especially if the way it's looking with FTR, you know, whether it's leading to a heel turn or whether it's leading to them leaving in April when their contracts are supposedly up, like, it looks pretty clear to me, and maybe you'll know this by the time you listen to this if you're waiting to listen till the weekend, I think FTR is losing the ROH tag belt to the Briscoes on Saturday. I think they're losing the AAA tag belt soon. And I think they're losing the IWGP tag team titles at Wrestle Kingdom to set up whatever is next for them.
Yeah, I believe that exact same thing. And whether that creates a line where then they can beef with the Young Bucks and then go, you know, have that situation with the AEW tag titles. Because I think, again, by the time all that rolls out, and here's the thing, the Acclaim doesn't need the titles. They need them for right now. But once they lose them, unless they really screw up, which is always possible with AEW, they have a problem sometimes with, like, you know, keeping up, you know, keeping
guys on TV.
Yeah, keeping them on TV, let alone propped up in everybody's eyes. This is why everybody's so worried about, hey, put the belt on Ricky Starks. Like, in a normal era, you'd go, he'd lose, but you keep him in the mix with other people. But people are so concerned that they're going to drop the ball with him like they did with Wardlow and with some others that people actually want him belted up. But that's a story for a different show. But they're another great example of that. I mean, it's just another, you know, example there where if you're able to kind of keep them propped up a little bit, you know, I don't know. That's enough AEW.
It's a really good point, though, with the Acclaim that they need the belts now, and they needed that win on Wednesday, that clean win over FTR desperately.
Yeah.
But when this reign is over, and it shouldn't end all that soon, but whenever it's over, and maybe it ends when they lose the belts to FTR, you know, sometime next year. But when it ends, from that point forward, if the reign continues to go as it is, they're made for the rest of their careers. I mean, to me, it's, yes, they have Billy Gunn as their manager, their second, whatever. But when I watch them, I think, well, these guys are the New Age Outlaws. They're Road Dogg and Billy Gunn. Like, and that team, that type of team, once they're established, they don't ever need the titles. They're, you know, they can do what they do. They can be in a feud. They're at that level. They're established. And you can let another team that needs the tag titles happen.
And they're such pricks that when people get tired of them, they just flip the switch. And then they're back to being the most obnoxious douchebags you've ever seen. And then, again, that's how that cycle can continue and continue and continue. And I think that that's one thing that AEW certainly has done right. They did hit upon them, and they've kept that going. So thank God for that.
Yeah, no, they're not to make this an AEW podcast. We'll get off this in a moment. But, like, when I watch them, and they're not my favorite act. It's much more of a WWE-style act than I normally gravitate to. But everything that you just said in terms of, like, where they're at as faces, where they are at as heels, and then there's still so much left to do with them as heels whenever the fans get tired of them, you can make the argument not only are they one of the top acts in AEW now, but when you look at other guys that are sort of at that level, they probably have the most runway still to go as a top act in the company before things for most people that enjoy that style of act, you know, get tired of them or gets really stale. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't know how much it would play if and when they come over to Japan, you know, as part of the partnership, but who knows? We'll see.
By the way, Motor City Machine Guns, I'll just shoehorn that in there too. They are your strong tag team champions. And any time that they'd like to wrestle anybody, I'm down.
Oh, 100%. Yes. It's been that way for 20 years for me watching Shelley and Sabin, and I still feel the same way. If they're on a show around me and I can get to it, there's a good chance I'm going to buy a ticket and go.
There's a guy who always tries to trap me. I'm like, hey, who's your favorite tag team? Because he always wants me to, like, try to say something controversial about the Young Bucks. It's kind of always the way I feel that's leading into. But it's like, look, the Usos, FTR, the Briscoes, Motor City Machine Guns, I mean, unquestioned, all four teams. And again, because I give a lot of credit to the Usos as characters, and if you took them out of there and put them in with any of these teams, it's going to be funny shit. You know, I completely believe that. But I also, as I'm going through, I'm thinking, it's like, you know, Aussie opens right there. Like, right now, when you start thinking about other teams, like, there's very few teams I like to watch more than Aussie Open. They are really, really good. And again, it's just, man, that's a one great thing, too, about United Empire. And I think another great reason that Jake Lee fits in there is because you do have so many foreigners there and guys who can go in and out. I mean, at some point, Jeff Cobb's going to be needed for something. And to me, that would be another great fit for that reason as well, too, is you get another, I guess he's really native Korean, but again, a non, you know, British, a non-Australian, a non-American, you know, in the group.
Yeah, it definitely fits with the idea of the group for sure. And going back to Aussie Open, before we leave this topic and head over to the Stardom Tag League, to me, like what you said is dead on. And the exciting thing about them is they're one of the best tag teams in the world right now, and they are still in the midst of their rapid improvement phase. Like, watching that match, again, it was only 11 minutes, so you can't really compare it to some of their big high-profile match performances. But watching that match they had a couple days ago with Kidd and Coughlin, that to me was one of the most impressive performances I've ever seen them have, because they did all the cool Aussie Open stuff, but it was a much more controlled style of match. You know, they dominated, then they really made Gabriel Kidd look like he had a chance to beat him, then they shut the door and put him away. But it was just not – I don't want to – the word professional sounds bad, because they're obviously professional. They're professional wrestlers. They're in New Japan. They're one of the top wrestlers in the world. But I thought it was just one of the most efficient, effective, professional wrestling matches I've seen them have. And it's the type of thing you always see from very good wrestlers who have the potential to be great. When they go on tours like this, in companies like this, they always come out the other end better better than they were when they went into the tournament.
Kevin Knight the next time you see him outside of this in a singles match or something like that? I mean, again, it's just one of those things. He comes back, he's still going to be in that mode. I don't know if I want to be across the ring from him at those strong tapings, because you know what I'm saying? Like he's
incredible. You know, they've been great together, and it's also been interesting that kind of quietly, unless it's been mentioned on some of the English commentary that I haven't seen, since it's taken a little while for some of those shows to get up after going up very early or going up very quickly early on the tour. But what, like 3-4 shows into the tour, Kevin Knight went from being a black trunks wearing young lion to now he's wearing long orange pants. And that usually is the sign of having graduated from Young Lion status. So that's, that's another thing to look out for with Kevin Knight. The only other thing I want to mention about the tournament, we don't have to say any more than this. We talked about it last week. TJP and Francesco Akira, you want to have that list of top 5 or top 10 tag teams in the world. They have busted down the door. Whatever your feelings are, on TJP, or I guess Francesco Akira as well. They are a fantastic team. Just right out of the gate, a great tag team.
Who can say anything bad about Francesco Akira? With Perkins, it's really association. Easy.
He's a victim of osmosis.
And a great example of a guy, too, who, hey, New Japan, he was not a baby born in New Japan. He came from elsewhere, and thank
from
you
all Japan.
That. Yeah.
Another guy that passed through. Did a great job there, and then ended up in New Japan. So from that, let's go to talk about Stardom before the end of the show. The Stardom, the Goddesses Tag League, after a long run, as tours and tournaments in Stardom tend to be, which is fine because they're always very good. But this tournament ended last weekend, December 4th, on pay-per-view. For what I thought was a very good show, I didn't go into it with expectations that this was going to be a blowaway Stardom pay-per-view, like some of their shows in big arenas with big title matches. This was a tag league final night. But the last two matches in particular delivered. Hayashi Shida and Saya Kamatani were incredible on the show. Hayashi Shida, probably the MVP of this show. I thought Kamatani did a great job in the final, being a ragdoll that can make comebacks and needed Hayashi Shida to make saves for her. But in the end, it's the Stardom Neo Army 7-Up, whatever you want to call them, the team of Nanai Takahashi and you, that get the win, somewhat surprisingly with you rather than Takahashi, getting the pin on Saya Kamatani, most likely setting up a white belt title match down the line between those two. But I thought, like I said, great, I won't say semifinal because the tournament didn't have semifinals, but great second to last match on this show and a really, really strong final as well.
Yeah, I can say that now that it's over, because for free, or if you're a member of Stardom World, then obviously watch this show. It's absolutely worth your money or your time. But with hindsight being 2020, I would say, I probably would skip this one, when it came to the money, because of this was a, as you mentioned, it was a paint by numbers show. And I'm not meaning that in a negative way, but it was very simple where the booking was going. They did it a good job of it. the order of the matches, including the, you know, Hayashi Shida and Kamatani, you know, wrestling almost, you know, and at the end of the show and then having to come right back out for the final, and you and Takahashi wrestling earlier in the show, and how they played and the positioning of the Jumbo Princesses match, because that match actually had a play into the scoring or into the standings as the night went on. Like, everything was kind of like perfect that way, but there was really nothing to do backflips over again, unless again there's a, you know, and we'll get into the, you know, the better stuff, but you know, it was, this was a show that was, that I would say, if you're going to do this one next year, I think you're going to have to add something to it, have some more flash, have some more something going on, because I don't think this one was pay-per-view worthy. As they, because look, as they expand, look, they're going to do more and more pay-per-views. That's a fact. You know, they're going to do a lot more of these. So if you're not liking this, and I know some people are not loving this fact that they're doing this, but you know, hey, you could always wait a couple days until it's on Stardom World. I get why they're doing this, but if you are going to do this, maybe they needed something a little bit else on this show.
Yeah, I would think if you're looking at it from traditionally, like what makes a show pay-per-view worthy or not, I would agree with you. I think that, you know, it seems like, you know, they're able to run this many pay-per-views because people are ordering them. They're not seeing a massive drop off from, you know, like a more major show to a show like this.
Well, it certainly doesn't cost them any more to do. You're producing the damn thing anyway. So really it's just a matter of, you know, whatever money you got to kick out to the distributor and whatever it takes to make sure you're on live with a set connection or whatever.
Yeah. And really, I mean, for these pay-per-views, for the most part, they seem like they're piggybacked off of broadcasts that would have already been happening anyway. Most of these shows are live Samurai TV shows, or they're Sky Perfect, you know, terrestrial regular TV pay-per-views that then also end up being, you know, these online pay-per-views. So I don't think there's a whole lot of additional cost to it. And if you're bringing in buys, there's really no reason not to. If they didn't have the setup to where these shows go up 3 days later on Stardom World, I would say they're doing too many. But it's not that hard to wait 3 days and watch it if you don't think that it's, you know, that it's worth spending the money that it is, you know, to watch it on the night of. You know, we'll see. I mean, maybe it'll reach a saturation point, but it seems pretty clearly from a business standpoint that it hasn't yet. It always is a little bit weird when there's one of these pay-per-views that's in kind of a non-major arena, you know, like a house lights show, that always has a bit of a weird feel for a pay-per-view. But I'm never going to complain, because if it's a pay-per-view, we're going to be able to watch it live versus rather, you know, having to wait, you know, half a day or a day or 2 days, which is fine. I get it. But if I can watch a show live, I'm going to be pretty happy too. And the baseline for a Stardom show with a bunch of tag matches between a bunch of good teams is still going to be a very good show, you know? And so it's not a bad thing, you know, at all.
I forgot they were in the exhibition hall as the show went on. Now, not that I completely forgot, but at, you know, at the beginning, there's a door that's rolled up. So there's natural light coming in. It looks very plain. The Makuhari Messe International Exhibition Center, Hall 11, you don't go to 10 or 9 in 11, but
you got the semi trucks holding up the big screens.
Yes. But the damn thing, as it went on, they actually, and I don't know when it hit me, because obviously they didn't do this at the very beginning. Waka Tsukiyama does not have pyro, but they had the smoke, they had the lights, they had the gimmicks, the sparklers, or the, what do they call them things with the Goldberg breathing it in and whatnot. Those things, like, so they did bring the ambiance, they did bring the aesthetic, and that was important, you know, as it went on too, because it did kind of, again, and I like shows in wacky buildings, but like it did make it feel more big time.
Yeah, no, I agree. As the show went along, you didn't really notice that it was, you know, not a major arena. Again, this show was not designed to have blowaway matches up and down the card, but you had, you know, Mariah and Amisuri against Hanan and Sayahida was very good. Koguma and Hazuki against Micah and Himeka for the 10 minutes they had was awesome. I did want to point out, because it's someone who never gets discussion, and I'm not saying she's like a great wrestler. She's one of the best wrestlers in the world or anything remotely like that. But whether it be in this match on this night or throughout the tournament, I think someone needs to get some hype, some love that usually doesn't get it. I think Ruaka has improved dramatically. When you look at when she first debuted in your first, whatever, 6 months or even a year, you don't want to say that anyone is hopeless as a wrestler. And I know she was very young, but when I watched her and just the way she moved and just how lightly she struck anyone, I was just like, I don't know. Maybe, you know, maybe this isn't a long-term thing. She has turned into a very good tag team wrestler, a very good sort of power, big type of wrestler in this BMI 2000 team with Natsuko Tora. I was not looking forward to their matches going into this tournament, just seeing how, you know, Natsuko Tora's initial return, you know, was just leaned so heavily into the more tedious aspects of modern Oedo Tai. But they were very, very good in this tournament. Ruaka has gotten much better. I love the finisher where Tora is hitting the Swanton out of one corner. Ruaka is hitting her falling freezer bomb splash, which I still love how her hood always magically goes onto her head as she completes the splash. And sometimes one is legal, sometimes it's the other, but usually it's either the finish or leads to a great near fall, as it did here with Ruaka nearly pinning the Nai Takahashi. So a shout out to Ruaka, another wrestler in Stardom who, you know, against all odds when you first saw him, has been sharpened by the iron that is the Stardom roster and has become a very watchable professional wrestler.
That match was three small cars in Nanae Takahashi, and there were times where it was Takahashi was just letting the leather fly better than all of them, but as well she should for the amount of experience that she has. But, you know, Micah and Himeka, they end up losing to Hazuki and Koguma. That was important because the princesses had 10 at that point, so they
it was the banana peel match. It was the final night tournament, like we always see in G1 final night block action, where they had to lose to tell the story that needed to be told, so they lost.
Yeah, and then so you know, at that point, you know, Koguma and Hazuki would be the ones that would be advancing, but no, in the next match there's Takahashi and Yu, so they go ahead and wipe that out. So it's like, okay, well, we know who the blue goddesses are going to be. And then it was time for, of course, you know, I was happy because it was Inaba and Siri against Lady C and Mai Sakurai. And this would have been a perfect time for Inaba to knock out Lady C, you know, jump up there, kick all 177 centimeters, you know, smack her in the head and get the victory. That unfortunately didn't happen. And Siri ended up getting the victory because, you know, she's the star and that's fair. But I look at Inaba, the whole gimmick, the whole deal, the outfit, how she works, how she looks. I just think she can be a star. And whereas I look at, as much as I like Saeeda, she's not going to be, you know, I think there's only going to be so much you're going to be able to do with her. She's probably going to be
a utility player.
Yeah, either a utility player or a tag team person. But, man, there's something about Inaba. It's just I don't know exactly what it is, but it's going to come down to just seeing her in singles matches against top people and how she's able to hang in there to see, you know, exactly where she's going to go. But I think she's got it.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think that's everything you just described is why I'm so ridiculously excited for that match against Suzu Suzuki on the Taka Taichi Mania show.
And she is a star, period. Suzu Suzuki should be in the States making big money, except, you know, nobody wants to see her do that. But there's nowhere she can go where people are not going to throw money at that woman.
Oh, yeah. She's the type of person that on an indie show, on an AEW show, she'll come out initially. 95% of the people won't know who she is, and then by the end of it, everybody is going to, you know, they're going to know who she is, they're going to love her, they're going to want to see her again. Other note on this match, just it was interesting in that Mai Sakurai and Lady C, obviously from different stables, Sakurai from DDM, Lady C from Queen's Quest. The tournament started with them not being on the same page as a team at all. By the end, they were working together. That didn't necessarily lead to any wins. They took the zero, the big L throughout this tournament, but they were a more cohesive team by the end. So it will be interesting to see if anything comes from that. We then had Mayu Iwatani and Momo Kogo defeating Saki Kashima and Fukigen Death. The interesting thing to me is really not even this match. You go back to the previous night where Iwatani and Kogo had to wrestle twice. Some of the stuff on social media, some of the stuff you just kind of see post-match, it feels like we might be seeing a break between Mayu Iwatani and Momo Kogo. I wonder if we're going to see some sort of something bigger happen in Stars in general, maybe a different direction for Mayu Iwatani, particularly after not winning the IWGP Women's Championship. Just something to put a pin in and see if it's just one of those wacky things that happens in Stardom and on Stardom social media that doesn't go anywhere, or if it's one of those things that happens in that realm that does actually lead to something we see in the ring.
I still think they should have been called Mo Peaches.
But that might be the nickname for Momo Kogo, but what do you have for Mayu Iwatani in there?
Well,
Mo Peach Towels.
Fuzzy Peaches or something. I don't know. No matter what direction you go with that, I'm just going to shut up before I get canceled out by myself, for God's sakes there. But Julia and Thekla, first of all, is there any, again, Julia wears clothes good. Now, again, in the all black outfit, it's like there's nothing that Julia, she's perfect as far as
she's Masahiro Chono.
She's the coolest thing on feet.
The coolest person on the face of the earth, almost no matter what she does, even with gear that anyone else would look like a total dork wearing. Julia, again, much like Masahiro Chono, all the Aristris stuff,
yeah,
is just one of those people that if you put them in a room of 1,500 normal people, I don't know why 1,500 normal people would be in one room. That's probably another story for another day. But she, much like Masahiro Chono, would walk into that room and everyone would know that's the star. That one person is not normal compared to everyone else. Thekla, very cool as well. With the Mafia Bella look, but Julia, again, like you said, just a star's star here and always.
Got busted open because that's what she does, a little bit of blood on the face there because they go hard and Starlight Kid is great.
That was scary when you think of what that looked like, in the sense it didn't look like a normal forehead cut. The first thing I thought when I saw that trickle of blood coming somewhere between like the bridge of the nose and the inner part of the eye cavity, I'm like, oh my god, she broke her orbital bone and the match with Shuri is off.
I thought it was a braid. I'm like, oh wait, oh no, that's not her braid.
Yeah, it was scary because it was just like this single line of blood coming down instead of like a big splotch. I'm like, oh god, second year in a row, the plans for her most likely to win the World of Stardom title at the end of the year are gone. But thankfully that was not the case. That does not seem to be the case. And we are still all systems go for the main event on December 29th.
So that was fun. It really didn't mean anything because, again, with the points and all that and everything was pretty much done. But then we did get one, obviously, with a lot of stakes. And that was the penultimate match between Tam Nakano and Natsupoi against Tai Ishida and Kamatani. And I'll say this, I've had to hear from enough people who have seen Melt here now for the first time that I'm in the minority. They're not my favorite tag team. They are everybody else's favorite tag team, but they're not my favorite tag team.
I love everything about them as a tag team. The fact that they went through that brutal feud culminating in the cage match earlier this year to then realize we are actually the exact same person. We are going to embrace that and become not only a team, but have a team name, have a song, have an entrance choreography as we come out. They are perfect as a tag team. I thought for 9 minutes, again, you've got four of the best wrestlers in the world going at it, 9 minutes with stakes on the line. I thought this was great. It continues to be noteworthy that Saya Kamatani has not attempted the Phoenix Splash since the Mina Shirakawa injury. She continues to use the regular 450, the Firebird Splash, as a finisher, and that was what she got here, the win over Natsupoi, to move to a points tie with Nakano and Natsupoi. But since they clearly here won the head-to-head direct match, that advanced them to the final against 7-Up.
And it seemed like, and I don't know, obviously not speaking Japanese, there was a part of me, it seemed like it was like there was that double thing of like, you know, it was like a Tam and Natsupoi were, oh God, they're so upset because they lost. And then the reality hit that Utami and Saya were moving on. It was like, ah, shit.
Yes.
But then it was that same scenario for Utami and Saya, because I was wondering how much of a break we would get in between, because we did have an intermission, a short one, earlier on in the show. It's like, okay, how much time are they going to give them? Was it maybe 3 minutes? Even if that, before 7-Up was back out.
It wasn't very long. They went to the back. We had maybe a slightly longer than normal cleaning and disinfecting of the ring in between matches moment. But it wasn't a full intermission. I'd say maybe 5 minutes tops. 7-Up comes out, you know, looking pretty fresh. Saya and Utami come out and they're, you know, still selling the exhaustion from the match they just had. You know, and we're off to the races. We talked about it a little bit earlier. I don't know what your thoughts were on this. I thought this was a great match.
I thought it was too. You know, and maybe not great, but it was really, really good. Most importantly for me, it really exceeded my expectations, because it kind of like, you know, because I'm an idiot. So I'm thinking watching.
There's a drop there. I will never be the one to make it.
You know, once Micah and Emeka lost, I was like, ah, God damn it. You know, like, okay. And then it hit me when Nane and you came out. It's like, why would they not win this? You know, Gabby had to go back with her tail between her legs. You know, it's like everything with this Neo Stardom, like, they're going to have to get some shine.
Yeah, why are they there
if
they're not here just – it didn't feel like they're here just to make it to the final and lose and go off into the sunset. And then when you think about the dynamic, I know I mentioned it earlier, but the dynamic of Hanai Takahashi and you, and the dynamic of Tam Nakano and Natsupoi, if the whole idea of the Neo Stardom Army is they hate, you know, what Stardom has become, they hate, you know, sort of what it represents, what certain wrestlers look like, all these sorts of things, how that factors into who gets the attention from the promotion. What better example of that for them to go against for the tag team titles than Tam Nakano and Natsupoi?
And yes, and I was wondering, it's like, it would have made sense to me if Tam and Natsupoi got the victory and Nana and you defeated them, but they decided not to go that way. But it's still in my mind, too. I'm thinking, okay, let's see with Utami and Saya how this is. And it went, I didn't realize it went 20 minutes until afterwards. And I think
it didn't feel that long.
That's the thing. I think that's, and I would not have expected to say that with you and Nana Taka. And really, this is less about Nana and it's a lot more about you. That
I thought you was tremendous in this match.
And
she had a great tournament and she was awesome here.
I got to swallow, you know, my thoughts as far as like, you know, see her repping Pro Wrestling Eve. This was good. And again, I don't know if I don't want to see her and I don't want to see this group and Nane in the mix forever. But for right now, you keep doing that, I'm good. So I can't complain. It now, depending on if you now you do have the opportunity to draw this out a little bit more, because they can still now beat Nakano and Natsupoi in a non-title match on a show to build toward. Again, I don't know exactly how the schedule is looking for them, but by not having them defeat them in the final, you do get two matches out of that, at least.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and that's, I mean, the way the schedule works out is They wrestle each other on Christmas Eve in a non-title match. These two teams wrestle each other at Korakuen Hall, year-end climax, the last show before the big show on the 29th at Sumo Hall. So I think there's a 0.0% chance that Meltier is winning that skirmish. Like that's being won by 7-Up, most likely with Takahashi getting the win, considering you had the direct pinfall to win the tournament. To your point, it is a bit curious that they didn't just do Takahashi and you defeating Meltier in the final of this tournament, because you could have gotten to the same place without doing that match at Cork. And what that tells me is that you defeating Saya Kamatani is going to be meaningful going forward as far as Kamatani's reign continuing and Kamatani defending against you. I don't see any other reason that you do that finish in that match unless Kamatani's going to be getting her win back in a title match. And that way you make you much more believable of a challenger than she would have been just coming in cold.
And it plays into, one would assume, what the Neo Stardom army is there for, you know.
Yes.
And again, so it all, that absolutely all makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. It was a very, it was a very interesting way of going about things. I'm surprised when you look going forward at what the big matches are coming up the 24th. I mean, that's the 24th. It's a Korakuen show leading to the big show on the 29th. But I'm honestly surprised that people are, maybe it's just the usual. I mean, it's Twitter, it's message boards. I mean, it's the loud but small corner of fans. But I've heard people saying that this card somehow for Stardom Dream Queendom at Sumo Hall is disappointing. This show has Shuri versus Julia for the World of Stardom title, which is the match that is really a couple of years in the making. Like, this is the biggest match Stardom can do right now for the title. That's happening. We've got Kairi versus Utami Hayashishita.
Wait a second. People are complaining about Christmas Eve, or they're complaining about Dream Queendom?
They're complaining about Dream Queendom.
Okay. I won't be.
No, right. I'm not at all. The reason I've seen people complaining about it is because they're saying there's too many outsiders in big matches, and you know, certain people aren't going to be in featured matches on this show. But again, you've got Shuri versus Julia for the red belt. Kairi versus Utami Hayashishita in a special singles match. Then you've got a match that I'm super excited about. Maybe I'm on an island here, but I really like Haruka Umasaki. We've seen her a lot on the New Blood shows. She's a perfect fit. However much involvement she's going to have, she's a perfect fit in Stardom. She challenged Saya Kamatani. She gets the next white belt title shot, which I have no problem with. It's going to be good. It's going to be a fresh match we haven't seen. And you don't need to put on a crazy high-profile white belt match when you've got Shuri versus Julie in the main event. Plus, we've got, as we mentioned, Tam Nakano and Natsupoi against Takahashi and Yu for the tag titles. We've got Momo Watanabe, Starlight Kid, and Saki Kashima defending the Artist of Stardom titles against Prominence, Risa Sera, Suzu Suzuki, and Kurumi Haragi in a hardcore match. And then a high-speed title match with Izumi against Hikari Shimizu for Izumi to try to tie the all-time defense record for the high-speed title. There also was a three-way number one contenders match to determine who will next challenge for the tag titles. Like, I don't know what else you needed on this show.
I kind of sort of get it, but like, I don't know. I mean, Shimizu's in colors anyway, or I mean, she's associated. And
yeah,
sometimes you just need to have title matches. You need to have defenses, and you just need to have good matches, and you want to see where people are against certain other people. And Umasaki stepping up in facing Kamatani, you know, I don't know why somebody would complain about that, especially when you have Prominence coming in, when you have Kairi and Utami, when you have Suri and Julia. And you know you're going to have other stuff added to this. You're going to have multi-woman matches that are added that are probably going to be fun. So I'm surprised that people would be salty, except I'm not, because it's people and online and whatnot.
Yeah, exactly. And probably giving more attention to that than is even deserved on my part. But I was just taken aback, because as this card was coming into focus, I, in my own sort of bubbles, like, oh my God, I'm hyped. The top two matches are going to be great. I'm excited for Izumi and Shimizu. I'm excited for Kamatani and Umasaki. Tag title match should be really good. You know, and then I'm looking at the Korakuen show on the 24th, like, it's a lot of tag matches. It's a lot of Road 2 stuff, but you got, again, the tag title preview match. Saya Kamatani and Izumi against Starlight Kid and Haruka Umasaki should be awesome. And then we get an elimination match main event with Shuri, Mirai, Ami Sore, Tomoka Inaba, and Nanami. It was sort of a satellite member, I guess maybe even a full member of God's Eye, even though she's not a full-time member of the promotion, against Julia, Micah, Himeka, Mai Sakurai, and Thekla. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Yes, it will.
It'll be like, great fun.
Yeah, anybody could buy it. Like, no Inaba on the 29th, no Micah, no Himeka. Come on.
Well, I think some of them will be involved in that three-way tag title number one contenders match.
That's true, yeah. Hazuki, I still need more of, too. I'm still happy she's... Look, I...
She's been great since she came back. Yeah. Like, it's insane how great she's been. And I will let you make your point in one second. I apologize. I just want to say, if you have not seen... I'm saying this to you, Mike, and to everyone listening. If you have not seen the Fuwa-chan debut match, that YouTuber, that internet celebrity... it was back in, what, October. The match was not shown live on the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
It is up on Stardom World. And it's actually really, really good. Fuwa-chan looked so much better than I would have expected. And so much of that credit deserves to go to exactly who you're talking about, Hazuki, in terms of training her, getting her ready. I was shocked. I will leave the floor to you. I just wanted to say that to bolster your point about how freaking awesome Hazuki is.
I just want to see, you know, I don't know whether it be in a team or something. It's like, I'd like to see something. I'd like to see some sort of, you know, kind of important thing for her to be in, because I just think she's got a ton of personality. She has looked great since she's been back. And, whether that's in a team situation or something, I'd like for them to do something with her. You know, I think it would be great right now.
Yeah, I agree. I would love to see Hazuki.
I'd like to see her come to the stage. She's one of those people that, yes, like, I can't. I'm not, you know, you can't get every fantasy, you know, that you want as far as Julia's going to be on Strong, you know, like, that's not going to happen, but Hazuki can. And Hazuki can come over and work, you know, indies here in the States and things like, she's the type that, bring her over with Kakuma, I don't know, bring her over with whoever you want to, like, you know, with a handful of people. She's one of those people I would love to see live, and I think would do great. Again, I think because of the personality and having her mojo back, I think it's, you know, I'd love to see something kind of go on with her right now.
I 100% agree. I'd love to see the progression of the white belt be Saya Kamitani to Natsupoi to Hazuki. The other option, and again, I don't know if it feels, if the opinion is, which I agree, that Hazuki could be like a true wrestler. I don't know if the high speed title would be a step down, but I wouldn't mind seeing her and Izumi go one-on-one more time. And I really think there's a very good chance that if, you know, right now Izumi is wrestling Hikari Shimizu to tie the defense record. What a way to break the defense record if they have Izumi against Hazuki. The only thing that would be better is if we get Izumi versus Starlight Kid one more time for the belt.
Yeah, and that's, you know, 2023 for Starlight Kid. when do you think the mask ever comes off? The mask is going to come off at some point, but I tell you, not until I sell a ton of those, because her popularity, yeah. And again, she's one of those ones that's like, it's sneaky, because find somebody in Stardom that doesn't like Starlight Kid for the most part. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, she is sneaky popular, and I don't, you know, again,
wasn't she in the top 10 on that list of Japanese wrestlers in terms of popularity from just a few months ago, which people were shocked by.
Yeah. And that's, you know, people were like, you know, the Pro Wrestling Illustrated thing came out. It's like, wait, what? Who? Well, pay attention. You
just watch her. Just watch the entrance and then watch the first 30 seconds of a match. And if you're not familiar with her, you'll get it really, really quickly.
She's another one. She's a star. Like, no matter how you cut it, she's a damn star. And again, another person that's pushing. And that's the other, again, this is where there's a blessing curse about seeing a Toni Storm or seeing whoever it is in, you know, Stardom. Because, again, it's when somebody goes to Marvelous and Wave, and we can talk about the Millie McKenzies, and there's lots of people who have been coming over and working in
Billy
Japan.
Starks, Billy Starks. Willa Nightingale and Tokyo Joshi Pro.
Absolutely. So it's like, you know, there's so many of these women coming over, but we haven't really seen it in Stardom. But now, You know, that's the thing. They have so many people. It just, you know, that's the only concern is how does it all blend? You know, when those people do come over on tours, and again, are we going to see maybe a, are we going to see new factions, or are we going to see a mixing up of factions with people coming in, with some new blood coming in? That's possible as well, too.
Yeah, yeah. It just, it really feels like going into 2023, so many things are possible for Stardom, really all the things you mentioned, plus what we talked about last week's show, you know, about the, you know, the tie up with New Japan and what direction that's going to go. And who could have predicted a couple of years ago this is where we'd be with Stardom right now? And it's impossible to predict where we're gonna, you know, where it's gonna be a year or two down the line with Starlight Kid with the mask. Yeah, I don't think you take that mask off her until she starts to cool off, and I don't think that's gonna happen anytime soon. I think the person who will be pushing to take the mask off of Starlight Kid the most is Starlight Kid, because if you follow her on social media, I've never seen a masked wrestler take more unmasked pictures with like a little heart over like 20% of their face so they can technically say that they have not been shown unmasked. So I'm sure that'll happen at some point.
It's hot underneath those masks, man. It's hard to breathe and stuff like that. It's terrible. But yeah, you know,
probably not fun on those summertime shows without air conditioning in some of those buildings.
I'm glad that we did our 45-minute show that we were talking about before.
It's impossible. Especially if we go like an extra week without doing a show, which is fine, but like then it's just going to be even less possible. That's totally fine. There's a ton of news, plus some interesting, obviously some good shows with Stardom, with some of the New Japan stuff, the Dragon Gate stuff. There's always, again, part of the deal is most shows on this website, on other websites, are covering like one promotion or two promotions or one show from one promotion. We're attempting as best we can, and like you said, sometimes with companies like Dragon Gate, we're a bit more of tourists to the company than residents, but we're covering an entire scene. So sometimes the shows are going to go a little bit long. I think you could talk for 6 hours about everything that's going on in Japan. That won't happen, thankfully. We should close this out.
We shall. But, you know, I know what you're saying. It's hard to catch up with things, Mike. Where can I catch up with everything that's taking place, because I can't be up at 4 o'clock in the morning sometimes when these shows are airing. I live on the East Coast of the United States. You know, how am I going to know the results? Well, you do that by listening to the Wrestling News at Wrestling News AV on Twitter or on Facebook, thewrestlingnews.com. Everything that you need to get your day started or to get caught up in the world of professional wrestling, usually up between 8 a.m. and 8:30 a.m. Eastern time every single day, all right? 7 days a week, I'll bring you what you need. Did you fall asleep during Raw? Don't worry, we'll have the results from you. What's going on with the ratings or the tickets? We'll have that information for you. Mike, what's going on in CMLL? I need to know about Euphoria. Hey, I'm Euphoric talking about Euphoria. You'll know what happens at Arena Puebla the same way. I don't know. Fuck that. Hey, look, just listen to the goddamn wrestling news, okay? Every single day, everything you need from all around the world, including main big Japanese results and news covered for you. And you can also listen to me, Black Wrestling Podcast, if you're on their Patreon. Spend $1, spend $10, whatever it is, throw some money at them. Bulls in the China Shop, I do that with Vin Forte, do that with my man Cal, Fam, everybody, Math, Drip, Davis, everybody, Mimi, that's associated with them. They've always been great. I love Black Wrestling Podcast. You say, where did you get that slick sweatshirt? Where did you get the one with the Nation of Domination on it? That's where I got it, through them. I love them as well, too. Mid-Atlantic Championship Podcast in flux right now, but I am working on some great things, including a history of tag team wrestling and Jim Crockett Promotions that, Adam, I got to remember to send you, because you might get a kick out of that one. So working on the script for that. Not sure if it's going to be a podcast or like a mini magazine at this point. It's up to about 20 damn pages. So, you know, that's about the only stuff that I think that I'd like to promote.
That's it? Nothing else?
No, well, that's it. If you want me, you know where to find me. Come at me.
That sounds like both an invitation and a threat.
Oh, it is.
On my end, I guess after you listen to the wrestling news and you are 100% up on all the current goings on in professional wrestling, and you think, you know, I still want to listen to more professional wrestling talk, but I just kind of want to sit back, zone out, and hear two guys talking about a completely random wrestling show, I have the podcast for you. It's Wrestling at Random, hosted by me and my close, longtime personal friend, Jeremy Deemer, where each and every week we review a wrestling show. It could be a weekly TV episode. It could be a pay-per-view. It could be a TV special. It could be an arena show that made tape. It could be any of those things. The randomizer picks it. We watch it. We talk about it. That goes up every Sunday evening for free at wrestlingatrandom.com or wherever you get your podcasts, very likely the same podcast delivery service that you're getting this podcast from. You can find Wrestling at Random there. It goes up 6 o'clock Central Time every Sunday night for free. In addition to that, we have a bonus feed over at patreon.com/wrestlingatrandom, where every Thursday we do an additional show exclusive to that feed, exclusive to our patrons. And there is a tier on our Patreon where you can be the intentionalizer. You can choose anything for us to watch. It only has to be 10 years old. That is the only caveat. That is the only rule. Otherwise, if you can find it, if you can send us a link, if you can tell us where to watch it, we will watch it. We will review it. As one example of the show, this week, coming up on Sunday for free, we are reviewing an episode of ICW, the Outlaw Territory, that Randy Savage was in, that Leaping Lanny Poffo was in, among others. An episode from January of 1982 that features Randy Savage, features Leaping Lanny Poffo, features a surprise appearance by our favorite wrestler over at Wrestling at Random, Big Cat Ernie Ladd. That is on the free feed coming up this Sunday. And then just went up today as we record this on Thursday on the bonus feed, a randomly selected two-pack of matches, one of which is Lou Thesz versus Buddy Rogers from, I believe, 1951 or 1953, from the International Amphitheater in Chicago, Illinois, for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. And the second match on that same show that we review is Fritz Von Erich versus the Original Sheik from Dallas in 1977, a Texas death match.
I popped when I saw that come up on Twitter that those were the matches. I really, really did.
You could not have had a bigger contrast between two matches. But that just gives you an idea of the type of stuff we have on there. There are pay-per-views. We've reviewed WWF pay-per-views from 2011, ECW TV shows from the late 90s. We just did Wrestle Rock Rumble a few weeks ago, which, my God, what an odyssey that was. On last week's show, we had our first ever review of a CMLL TV show. So lots of good stuff over there. And then you talked about Influx. I'm currently reformulating, figuring out exactly what I'm going to do in the new year with the Three Count Fall newsletter, trying to figure out if the best format for me, given everything else going on in my life, is to try to do a weekly or bi-weekly on a regular schedule sort of deal, or if it's just, I watch this big show, I have thoughts on it, I'm going to write a single article about that and post that up on there. I've been loath to do that because I wanted to have it be a weekly newsletter or a bi-weekly newsletter. But in reality, for it to continue, that's much more likely the format that it will take. So stay tuned for news about that. It is in flux, kind of dormant right now, but adamsummers.substack.com. You can go back, read all the issues from earlier this year, and hopefully that will roar back to life in 2023.
Roar back to life like the Big Cat Ernie Ladd would, Adam Summers.
Yes.
Nothing I hate more than a mangy dog chasing a car, except for old broken down wrestlers chasing me.
We cannot say anything else. The show must end.
That's right. Right now, 6'9", my feet's cover the ground I walk on, and now this big finger's gonna hit stop.
And you cannot just let a man get away with certain things and you not be a man about a situation. And I don't care what size the guy is, but size is never spelled man, you know. And a man has to be a man when it's time to be a man, and that's what Ole would do, or any other good man would do. and not size dictating to you who the man is. The man dictates to you that he was a man. And that's just the bottom line.